Care Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
This is not a people or staff issue. This is a pure bed and resource issue. That's how an emergency department consultant, who himself spent 4 days on a trolley in an overcrowded emergency department, has described the bed's crisis. Dr. Mick Malloy, who is diabetic, suffered temporary paralysis, leaving him unable to move his legs. He said his 4 days on the trolley as a patient, while traumatic, is not unusual for patients today. He joins us on the line, as does Dr. Brendan O'Shea, Newbridge GP and spokesperson for the Kildare faculty of the ICGP. Good morning to you both, and Brendan, we'll get your views in a moment. But Dr. Mick Malloy, welcome to the programme. You might tell us a little bit more about your experience in the emergency department the other week.
So this goes back to actually May last year. It just arose in media circles because we had our Irish Medical Organisation AGM, and as a group we were given updates on various things that had arisen during the year, and I just mentioned my own particular medical situation, and it got quite a lot of attention, more than I would have expected. But I ended up in an emergency department over the bank holiday weekend last May, and I had difficulty with power and feeling in my legs, difficulty walking, and needed the services of an acute hospital, needed to get intravenous treatments, nothing which could have been provided at home, and as a result needed to be admitted, and unfortunately there were no beds. And at that point in time there were very large numbers of people who were in the emergency department environment who had been admitted, but for whom there was no bed to go to. And I wasn't the only medical practitioner. There were a number of others who were there as admitted patients as well at the same time. So the staff were fantastic. The treatment was excellent. I was seen twice a day in ward rounds, as you would expect. Just the issue was there were no beds physically for people to move into.
So you spent 4 days on a trolley and you were moved 7 times along corridors. And I know that the emergency department obviously is open 24 hours. So I'm sure that would mean very little rest or sleep for you or for any other patient who has to be on a trolley in an emergency department.
So, excuse me, we've got to look at this in two different ways. One is it's an environment which works 24/7. So the lights are on, there's noise, there's the expected work noise 24 hours a day. It isn't a planned space for people to be spending almost the full duration of their hospital's day in an emergency department. The idea is you get your first initial treatment to make sure what the condition is you're being treated for, and then you get moved into an appropriate inpatient bed where there are times where you can rest because it's quiet, the lights are off, and there's nobody moving in and out. In an emergency department, there are a very small number of cubicles, and you can often find the number of people admitted are twice the number of cubicles available. So there are people on corridors everywhere. You have patients being moved from place to place because the staff who are trying to see the new patients coming in have to find a space that can actually examine the new patient. So there's a constant movement around when you're in there, and it can be very distressing, particularly when, as you said, I'm diabetic. You're meant to have meals at certain times, checking your sugars at certain times. It can be very difficult to coordinate that when you don't know when the meal is going to come, or indeed if it's going to come.
Brendan O'Shea, to bring you in on this then, and you've been listening to what Dr. Malloy has had to say, and I know you were reading that article as well in the Irish Examiner over the last few days, but even, and I mentioned this at the top of the programme, I was speaking to somebody over the weekend who was in the emergency department in Naas General Hospital and was told it would be a 15-hour wait before they were seen or possibly given a trolley. Now, that's no criticism of Naas General Hospital, to put that clearly, that the staff there are doing their best. But sometimes now we're hearing it, and I'm sure you're hearing it in your GP practice, that if somebody gets a referral to the hospital, they're thinking, oh no, is there anything else I can do, because I don't want to spend hours upon hours sitting in A&E?
There is nothing new about this. This has been ongoing for decades. It was there before the pandemic, became almost worse during the pandemic, and is still going on. Getting a direct experience from a senior clinician such as Dr. Malloy is really helpful. It adds impetus. It's important for us to understand, to work really hard to try and understand. The people who work in the casualty departments and in the hospitals and the patients, it's just really important not to be remotely critical of what's going on. We really have to work hard to understand what is actually really going on. We know that there are serious issues with our acute hospital system in this country. We know that the longer people stay in casualty departments, they're at significantly increasing and escalating risk. We know that we have in the order of 28 acute hospitals. We know that half of them are probably too small. There's a consensus that international best evidence would have it that hospitals that are above 300 to 400 to 500 beds consistently are more likely to deliver better care. Dr. Malloy has clearly identified more acute beds, and it's certainly clear to understand that our acute hospital beds per capita in Ireland is in the lower centile. It's not as low as Canada, but certainly this may be relevant. Now, on the plus side, what can we do? Well, we've got 26,000 nursing home beds. We have to ask ourselves, are all the patients in the casualty department and do all the patients in the acute hospitals need to be actually in there? We know that in Ireland, our capacity for social care and primary care is poorly funded and historically low, and but it's getting better. So certainly as a GP, individually, all the GPs in Kildare, it happens two or three times a day, particularly with one of our frail elderly patients, oh my gosh, do I really have to go to the casualty department? And we find ourselves going out on a limb around this. If, on the other hand, we had more care in the community, if we had more nursing care, if we had more care packages, if we had some more GPs, that would be at least as important as simply increasing the number of acute beds. And a real risk with just increasing the beds in the current system. The current system needs to be seriously reformed before you put more money into it.
Before we go back to Dr. Malloy, could we also look at ourselves and say, are there people within the community that are going to A&D that don't actually need to be going to A&E, and that's clogging up the system as well? Do we have to take a hard look at ourselves, or is that too easy of an out?
I think nobody is in the casualty department casually. The people don't really drift in there. Sometimes they'll drift in there because of chaotic social circumstances. And certainly if we had a little bit more capacity in our practice, we could probably keep some of those people and maintain them in the community. Likewise, we have an increasing population of wonderful, complex, frail older people. If we had a little bit more capacity on the general practice side, we could almost certainly care for them more directly in our nursing homes. So there's a bit of joined up thinking that requires to be done. Going back to the entire acute system, if you have half of our acute hospitals are too small, they are arguably trying to do much. They're trying to deliver too many specialty services. It might be better to consider configuring them into centres for ambulatory care for complex older patients, and to pull the acute specialist services into the bigger centres. We also need to do more in terms of electronic administration. It's terrible. These are really expensive hospitals to be running. They're all being run on paper systems, so you get delayed discharges. And then there's an issue of staffing, that we rely too much on junior hospital doctors in training who are not the same as senior clinical decision makers. So there are a number of different solutions that we really need to be looking at. And Dr. Malloy's personal story, and this is a real touchstone, we really need to look at this.
Yeah, some of the messages coming in to us this morning saying that General Hospitals and NACE has been on its knees for a long time now, not due to the fault of any of the staff, but simply because they don't have the resources. Dr. McMalloy, to go back to you then, and we hear on a daily basis when the INMO trolley watch figures are released, 20, 40, 60, 80, even, you know, sometimes down in Limerick, over 100 people waiting on trolleys in emergency departments. That's just far too high.
It is. Now, respectfully, I'd have to disagree with Dr. O'Shea on quite a number of his comments there, because none of what I've mentioned was in any way to suggest that the acute hospitals should be getting the resources and GPs not. In fact, since I started talking about this over 25 years ago, the number of beds, the Department of Health identified they need 5,000 extra beds. We've doubled the number of GPs in the system since then. It hasn't made a whole lot of difference to the amount of inpatient care we need, because people, when they are referred by the GP to the hospital, it is for a bed. Now, the nursing homes, that's a different challenge, again, because we don't have enough nursing homes. In fact, they're nearly always full. And in my area where my hospital resides, two of the nursing homes have closed because it was uneconomic at the moment, with the degree of regulation they have, to be running as an operation, which is a small nursing home, not the large corporate type event nursing homes, because it becomes much more financially, economically manageable in those environments when they can bulk purchase. But from the perspective of the acute hospital system, when people come to the emergency department with a significant condition which requires admission, it isn't the people who turn up with minor injuries and minor complaints that are getting sent home that are part of the problem at all. I mean, those people are easily dealt with and managed and sent home. Sometimes they will have an excessive weight for the particular issue they've had, but they're not blocking access to the inpatient beds for the people who are on trolleys. The issue with the trolley counts is it is far too high. We've developed a tolerance over the last 20 years for, oh, there's 20 trolleys today, there's 100 trolleys today, there's 600 trolleys in the system today. And I don't want to be overly critical of the media, but it really only flags up when there's a new record figure. So it's 700 today, let's get on the story. It's 900 today, let's get on the story. When there's 100 trolleys across the country, that means there's 100 people who cannot get access to a bed, who need to be in a bed. That's unacceptable. It's always been unacceptable. We should be dealing with that at the earliest point. There's a recognised metric for hospitals that once they go beyond 85% full or capacity, you end up having challenges in the system. Mm. We are operating some of our hospitals at 120 and 125, which is dangerous. And a recognised study from the UK, which looked at millions of admissions in the UK, found that if people spent more than 6 hours after the decision to admit in an emergency department, for every 80 people that did that, there was one extra death which should not have happened.
Hmm. Is it ever going to be possible, do you think, Dr. Malloy, to have no patients on trolleys then in hospitals? And if so, how would you propose to do that?
Well, let me go back 2 years. I thought that was the stated intent of the HSC and the Minister for Health. They said there will be no patient on trolleys. But what we find now is there's a fudging of the figures. What used to be a fairly easy thing to quantify, you'd look at the trolley car count every day and you'd say, right, this year it's 300, next year it's 400, the year after it's 500. There's a worsening problem. What's happened last year is they've split the figures now. So there are people on trolleys and there are other people on surge beds, which effectively are both the same thing. We're robbing Peter to pay Paul. We're postponing elective daycare activity, elective day surgery, elective endoscopy to house the patients who need to be in an inpatient bed without recognising the fact that we should be just building all these inpatient beds. I reject the suggestion by Dr. O'Shea that we don't need this. We actually do need this, and it's demonstrated consistently for the last 20 years we're way under capacity for inpatient beds. And if we don't address it, more people are going to die unnecessarily. I'm lucky I wasn't one of those people.
Dr. Brendan O'Shea?
It's complicated, and there's no doubt about it that you tend to view things from the perspective that you're sitting in. But certainly every day in our discharge summaries we see notes from casualty departments in relation to patients who left before being treated. The international evidence would suggest that, and we are beginning to do it significantly so in Ireland, if we invest in primary care, it is absolutely as much part of the solution as simply increasing beds. I would have to sound a caution. It's important not to simply continue to fund a system that requires to be reformed. Even the extent to which the acute hospital system is dependent on junior hospital doctors, I would view that we're an outlier in that regard. That needs to be addressed. We need to have more senior clinical decision makers. I suspect myself and Dr. Malloy actually otherwise would agree on quite an awful lot of this. And certainly the metrics whereby people are left in casualty departments, it's extremely stressful and difficult for staff, and it's highly unsafe for the patients concerned. So we need to keep on having these conversations.
Dr. Molloy, final word to you then, and I was reading as well in the Irish Examiner where you said that it's long recognised that sleeping in an environment which is noisy and where the lights are constantly on is a well-recognised way to torture people, and that's how you essentially described your stay in emergency department on a trolley.
Sleep deprivation is banned under the Geneva Convention, and effectively we're doing that every day to patients who are admitted to hospitals and left on trolleys. It's as simple as that.
Do we need to extend hospitals then? If we look at all of these hospitals that need more beds, a lot of them would say that, well, we don't have anywhere to put the beds, we need to build extensions onto our hospitals. That's going to take years.
Okay. Absolutely, it is going to take years. But the Department of Health published their own report in 2002. If this was the Mick Molloy report on bed capacity, I could understand everybody having their challenges and saying, we don't believe it. The Department of Health published their own report in 2002 based on a population of 3.9 million, where they identified they needed 5,000 extra beds, which they had a plan to put in place by 2011. Judging along with that, they said, we are going to extract the maximum efficiency out of the system, so maybe we won't put in 5,000 beds, we'll plan to put in a minimum of 2,900 and something beds. That never happened. In fact, the capacity went down. And also, at the same time, the population has gone up. We're 22 years on from that report, which was published when the current Taoiseach was the Minister for Health. We have not seen any of those beds. If you were to add up all the beds that they talk about every year that have been added extra into the system, we'd be close to it. But when they add in, they take away. So we have had no net gains in the system except a million more population, and we've less beds. So in fact, it is now harder to get a bed than it was in 2000.
Dr. Mick Molloy, Emergency Department Consultant, and also Dr. Brendan O'Shea, Newbridge GP and spokesperson for the Kildare Faculty of the ICGP. Thanks to you both for joining us this morning and for sharing your views on that. And as I said to you, somebody was talking to me over the weekend to say that they were waiting 15 hours to get seen in the NACE Emergency Department, which again is not a criticism of NACE Hospital whatsoever. But it's just a highlight of the issues that are out there when people try to access healthcare and access the treatment that they need. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will bring you local issues from the Claymaanuith Municipal District and also Rathangan. There was a public meeting to discuss the proposed relocation of Rathangan from the Kildare Garda District to the Leixlip Garda District. A meeting took place last night.
Kildare Today with Owen Beatty.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Keep your messages coming in as well. We have a listener poll open this morning. The question we're asking you is, do you think the deposit return scheme for bottles and cans is working at the moment? Just simply text in yes or no, and we'll bring you the results of that poll after 10 o'clock because we're speaking to Conor Pope, Consumer Affairs Correspondent with the Irish Times about that. Before that though, I want to go to the Claymaanuith Municipal District and Social Democrats Councillor Aidan Farrelly is with us. And Aidan, you wanted Kildare County Council to request the NTA install two new bus shelters at Dagwell's Cross. Is that going to happen?
Morning, Owen, and morning to your listeners. Just to update listeners, we had a very positive meeting at Dagwell's Cross. As you'll know, we've spoken many times over the years, Owen, about the need for considerable works to take place at a number of junctions in our municipal district area, Dagwell's being one of them, and being one of the most important ones. But also, we have Allan Wood Cross, we have Furman Cross, and also the crossroads in Prosperous in the main centre itself. And we had a very important meeting on site at these places last week. And so we were presented with preliminary drawings of what the designs might look like for some of these works. And just to really emphasise again, I know I've spoken to you before about the capital programme and that significant money is up to €1 million. Was available for the designs of these projects. So we're hoping to see these redesigns come towards public consultation very soon. And as part of that, then we'll see any new bus stops or bus shelters. I was contacted by a number of local residents in the Dagwells area who are using the 120 bus regularly, whether it's to get to school, to college or to work. and had nowhere to actually stand and wait for the bus. So we want to encourage people to be able to use these bus services safely. And in doing so, we need somewhere on such a fast road where traffic counts are so high and speeds are so high. So hopefully once these designs at DAGS are completed and somehow we can find secure the work to actually do this work as part of that, we're hoping that the council will be able to install. You'll see there's new shelters at Fairmount, for example, and there are many throughout the county. That's what we need out in some of these more rural elements of our county too.
Going to Clane then, you wanted the council to review the cycling and pedestrian permeability to consider an appropriate number of pedestrian crossings. Do you want more or less pedestrian crossings in Clane?
More. Significantly more is what the feedback from local residents is to me in the last couple of months. The purpose of this, really, we have a lot of people using, there's quite a natural loop in Clane that people use to walk, to cycle, to exercise. And what we don't have, or what we have an absence of in some parts of that loop, is a safe place for families to cross, a safe place if our kids are walking or cycling to school to cross the road. So really, to get the evidence base to inform our policy, at the first step, what I was asking the council to do was just to audit what's there firstly, and to see, you know, we're told so often on that our local policies are directed by regional or national policies. So what I'm trying to get to the nub of here is whether there are national guidelines in terms of how often or how regular people should be able to expect to cross the road safely. And I'm not sure that there's enough in terms of safe permeability crossings for people in Clane just to, like I say, use that loop and to access local shops, access local business or go to school. So the council hopefully will do that. But again, we have a series of plans. You've got the Clane Town Centre first plan happening and works are underway with that. But also in the next year or two, you'll have the new Clane Local Area Plan coming on board as well. So these are the important points to raise at that point.
Finally, and briefly on this one, Aidan, if you would, new library in Clane, you're keeping this on the agenda. Any update?
Absolutely, and it's really progressing very well, very positive again. We've seen the designs for the library, very exciting to see the new building come on stream very, very soon, hopefully. We do have the update was that they're progressing towards detailed design again, and for listeners just to be aware, what's been proposed is the new library to move down to the car park behind the church there on the main street in Clane. It'll be a real hub of activity for people in the community, something that's really, really worthwhile and needed. So again, just keeping it updated, it's one of the most positive aspects of the work that the council do with our library service. It's not just about renting books anymore. We know that the services that are available for people to access in their local library is exceptional, and Clane very soon will have a state-of-the-art service to use.
Social Democrats councillor on the Clane Maynooth Municipal District, Aidan Farrelly, thanks for your time, Aidan, and good morning. Let's go out to Rathangan then, and Fianna Fáil Senator Fiona O'Loughlin is on the line. A public meeting was held last night in the Rathangan Community Centre, hosted by Fiona and Councillor Anne Connolly, particularly to discuss the proposed relocation of Rathangan from the Kildare Garda Station to the Leixlip Garda Station. Fiona, good morning to you. Can you, I don't know how I'm going to start off, but can you just tell me where this has all come from? Because I'm looking at Google here. 46 kilometres is the distance between Rathangan and Leixlip. Why on earth would Rathangan fall under the Leixlip district?
Good morning to you, Owen, and that certainly was uppermost on everybody's minds last night. We had almost 200 people at the public meeting in the community centre. And firstly, I do want to thank Superintendent Paul Burke, who is in the Kildare district for about a year now, for coming to the meeting along with Sergeant Damon Malone. So basically, I had asked Superintendent Burke would he do a public meeting anyway to discuss other issues, and he had agreed to do that. And then in the interim, this information arose. So that really was uppermost on people's minds. We did speak about other issues that were important because people need to trust in the system that we have to try and keep people safe and secure in their homes. But in terms of the key issue, at the moment, Rathangan has its own station and it is aligned to Kildare Town. It had been aligned to Manastrevna at one point in the past. And there's a natural affinity between Rathangan and Kildare, Rathangan, Manastrevna, Rathangan, Newbridge, etc. And it's all within the same municipal district. But under the new proposals, the new operating model, which was intended to come in the end of May. Now it has been put off indefinitely, but that there would be three different community engagement areas, one operating from Naas, one operating from Carlow, this is in the new district, and one operating from Leixlip. And with Tangan, the proposal had been made where Tangan would move in to the Leixlip community engagement area.
Okay, and let's talk about response times then, Fiona, because in a situation, for example, where the station in Rathangan is closed, if you were to call the guards then from Kildare town, it's a 10-kilometre journey. If you look at Leixlip then, it's a 46-kilometre journey. The quickest route would take about 45 minutes. If your house is getting robbed, you might as well say to the burglar, sit down and have a cup of tea, lads, and wait until the guards get here in 3/4 of an hour.
And that's exactly my point and exactly how people felt last night. Now, to be fair, Superintendent Burke did bring some clarification in relation to it, in that under the new model that is proposed, everything will go to a central large station or operating area in Waterford in terms of 999 calls, and we'll go out to the nearest squad car to where the call comes in. So if, for example, the call comes from Rathangan, if the nearest car is in Edenderry, it will come to Rathangan. If the nearest car is in Kildare, that we would not have to wait until a car would be available in Leixlip. But aside from that, there's cultural issues too, and sometimes different state arms of the state need to come together to solve problems. So if we were in a situation with Rathangan, which we were a number of years ago, where we had to work with the local authority, MD, where we had to work with local arms of social welfare and with the HSE, etc. So there's a cultural understanding of where we're based geographically. But if, for example, Rathangan was in with Leixlip and we had to deal, it's not just outside the MD, it's outside the Dáil constituency. With all the best of respect to all of those who work in Leixlip Guard Station, they would not have an understanding of Rathangan, where it sits, the people, etc. So we took the unanimous view at the meeting last night that we would not like to see this proceed. Superintendent Burke has agreed to bring that message back loud and clear to his superiors. I have agreed to bring that back through at a political level. I have already written to the Commissioner, the Deputy Commissioner, the now Minister for Justice. That may change, as we know, in the afternoon. And I think it's important that the people's voices are heard. There should be consultation before these decisions are made.
Right,
there was no consultation.
Final point then, Fiona, just from, you know, an outside perspective here, is there an argument to be made for Rathangan Garda Station to be opened more hours? Should that be, for example, an 18 or a 24-hour station, or is there just not the manpower or woman power there to keep that station open? Why does Rathangan have to fall under, or under these proposals, fall under the Leixlip district?
The optimum would be that we would have a 24-hour station in Rathangan, and I know that every small village and town would want that and would say that. At the moment, the resources are not there. There is a big recruitment drive, as you know, to get more Gardaí, and the superintendent listened to the calls for better resources. What we do need are set hours. The hours aren't actually set at the moment. If the guard is there, the guard is there, and if the guard isn't there, then the call goes into Kildare, as we said. But we want to have set hours.
That's not good enough either, though, is it? Like,
no, it's
just
not.
To ring the Garda Station or to knock on the door at the Garda Station, and
absolutely,
sure, there might be someone there, there might not.
So we need to have very clearly set hours that people know that they can go in and somebody is present. The optimum is to have more Gardaí, and that's certainly a request that came across very loud and clear last night. But however, in terms of being aligned in an area, all stations are aligned in terms of needing extra cover, shall we say, as opposed to even not having cover. So there would always be an alignment, and that's a good thing, because Gardaí will be on holiday, they will need to take leave. One of our own Gardaí is on extended sick leave at the moment in Rathangan. So there will always need to be cover, but it would be far better to have that organised on a more local basis rather than having to go to Leixlip to have it organised from there.
All right. Fianna Fáil Senator Fiona O'Loughlin updating us on that public meeting that happened in Rathangan Community Centre last night. Thanks for that. Over 200 people attending that public meeting. And I know it's not just an issue for people in Rathangan. I was down in Monastrevin the other day talking to some locals and they said, we want to have more Gardaí here in Monastrevin because at the moment we're reliant on Kildare Town. So it's a similar situation where there is a Garda station. Guards, you know, can be at the Monastrevin Garda station from time to time, but not full time. And locals saying, why can't we have a full time Garda station here in Monastrevin? Anyway, thanks to Fiona on that.